One of them wanted to be the security guy. He claimed he was a security guy.
Right. Welcome to Special Edition of Security Guy Radio with my special guest today, Sergeant Tim Tremaine. And Jarvis, you're going to love this. Tim's written a book called Officer Up, Officer as a Verb, which is a great idea. And it's about creating a climate for appropriate police behavior. You're going to dig this.
Okay.
It's interesting, right?
Yeah. It sounds interesting already.
Exactly. So welcome, Tim. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, sir.
Now, where are you zooming in from us today?
I'm in Arlington, Texas.
Arlington, Texas. So here's my Texas story. I was on the way to Florida as is last year, drove through Texas, kind of the long crossway down some road that every 50 miles it was desert. Then all of a sudden a town out of the middle of nowhere showed up. And I got stopped almost between every single town. I guess my California license plate or something. And they were looking for something. But very professional. But it's interesting because they had a completely different approach. I don't know what you would call it. Attitude. Attitude always means something negative, but their whole style was different than other police departments I stopped. And I drove all across the country and saw a whole bunch of them. And this subject's really, really important to me because I think this is the crux of what's wrong in law enforcement today. Most things in law enforcement are right, but there are a few big optics that are incorrect. So tell us about your book and what got you going on writing this.
It's a small book, and it's directed towards the patrol officer and the first line supervisor. It really has one point with two applications. The point is that we on the street, we on the front lines, need as a profession, industry-wide, to take control of the attitude and the climate that we produce in law enforcement. Because the climate that we produce, the culture that we create, the thoughts that we have about who we are and how we do our business control how we act on the street. And a lot of the things that have taken place in the past have been more top-down oriented, administratively producing procedures and policies and rules, and those eventually filter down and they have an effect. But we really need more of a bottom-up effect. Because the people that are out doing the things that get departments into trouble are the people on the beat, the officer on the street. And so I think we need to take charge of that. We need to recognize that we have control over that. We may not have control over what the administration does, what our local governments do, what the courts do, what the legislatures do, but we have control over our attitude and the climate that we create from which we work out of applying law enforcement on a day-to-day basis. And so understanding the importance of culture and climate is one application. How we react one another within our own work context. And then the second application is peer intervention. It's understanding that we also have the responsibility for helping one another stay out of trouble, intervening when we see potential problems arise. And those are the two applications that I try to talk about in the book.
Well, I think this is a brilliant insight. When I was a training officer, one of the first things I taught people when they got in the car was, okay, let's forget everything you learned in the academy, because what's really important is how we're going to apply it. Secondly, it doesn't matter how you think you should apply it. You have to apply it this way here at this police department, right? Because Culver City had its own culture. San Gabriel had a different culture. And university had a different culture. I worked at three agencies, and believe me, each one had a different culture, which translates to a climate. We'll use the word climate because that's better. And if you didn't fit in that climate, you didn't work out. It doesn't matter how good a police officer you were technically, whether you've gotten complaints or not, you had to adopt to the climate of that department. And I think that's really important. I always used to tell them, remember this, don't do anything that would embarrass your grandmother, and behave like heroes, and you're probably going to have a great career, right? And so much of it has turned into us against them and warrior mentality, which is needed when needed, and you got to kick ass, you kick ass, right? But before that, you're a peace officer in California. That's what our title was called, a peace officer.
Ours too.
Yeah, and I think a lot of jurisdictions have that, right? And so if you put a Punisher, look, you know, familiar with the comic, The Punisher?
Yes.
Yeah, so there was an agency, I thought it was in Texas, maybe someplace out there, that put this logo of The Punisher on their police car in the little 10-man police department and thought that was great. We have a death skull drive around the top of your police car. It didn't quite translate to the community, right?
Absolutely not. That's a good example of people taking their climate and creating a negative climate, and the way they thought about themselves no doubt worked its way out in the way they treated the citizens and treated the people that they had to enforce the law against. And that's one of the things that we need to recognize. The culture is really the rules, the policies, and the procedure, but the climate is the psychological atmosphere that they create. And so if the guys in the briefing rooms and in the offices and the detectives and people out on the street are constantly talking about heavy-handed law enforcement and how they treated people when they acted wrong and how they arrested so many people and all these different things, and of course those things become stories and they become legends and they get passed down, you know, from generation to generation of cops, you kind of end up perpetuating that poor attitude and that climate that breeds misconduct among officers.
Well, I agree, and this is no knock on our brothers and sisters about this, right? These are style issues, and what I think is important to get this information out, Tim, is that it's going to help people in the long run. Now, do you believe that multiple cultures can exist or climates can exist effectively within one department? Because, you know, SWAT kind of has its climate, right?
And yes,
and vice versa. And, you know, detectives do, and patrol guys are kind of looked down on by the detective dicks, and SWAT is, well, you're just patrol and we're SWAT. And, you know, and then these create internal conflicts and rivalries, which can be good competition in one way. Right. And it can also be good teamwork. Another way, it can also not be so good for the department. Do you agree
it
that
it can?
Could you have multiple climates?
There are layers.
Right.
The overall department will have a general culture, and that's going to be shaped by the SOPs, the standard operating procedures, their general orders or the manuals that they operate from. And then because there's specialty groups, like you mentioned, patrol, SWAT, CID, detectives, and so forth, they will create their own little subcultures and their climates because they're the ones that are always working together. So you can see one climate in the patrol division and even various climates within patrol divisions.
Right.
If, say, a larger department has multiple divisions and then multiple areas within each division. So there can be subcultures and subclimates that operate, and they can exist together. But there can also be a one that's negative, one that focuses on a more negative aspect of one part of law enforcement or another. And that's where the problems can be found.
Well, except in motors, because I was a motor and we were the most bitching of all the divisions. Everybody knows that, of course. So we can't give motors a pass.
Motors are saints. Motors do no wrong. Motors can get away with anything.
Just there to catch the felons. Just catch the felons and pass it off to the report writing car. That's all we do. I write some tickets.
Yeah, the high boots.
And look good. That's right. Well, high boots are kind of gone now out here in California. They're going to those
utility pants. They're still here in Texas.
Oh, good. I'll have to come over there and be reserved then instead. All right. So this is really fascinating to me. What was your nexus for coming up with a book? These are things I've always thought as a police officer that, and I belong to certain climates and groups within the PD, and there's some I identified with, some I didn't. I mean, this is common. But how did the light bulb come on for you one day to say, you know what, I think this is the crux of the matter? Because it really is the crux of the matter.
Yes, I agree. A little over a year ago, I was in a month-long school for supervisors, and one of the instructors at that school was on the commission that did the study in Ferguson. And so we were able to get firsthand, behind the scenes, a little bit inside baseball on what they found. And that encouraged me to go and actually read the report. And then that led me to the report, the President's Commission on 21st Century Policing, read that report. Then I read the report on Philadelphia. Then I read the report on Baltimore. And all these things began to kind of snowball in my thinking that we needed to do something on the bottom end where the rubber meets the road, because what I was seeing was a lot of recommendations for policy changes and oversight changes and things that were going to take a lot of time and money and study. And eventually they're going to do good things, and eventually there'll be changes, but we needed something that we could implement simply and quickly. And that's where I came up with the idea of the legit program that I talk about in the book. Two things that they talk about so often is the concept of legitimacy and procedural justice. When I started thinking about how can I communicate with people in a crisis situation to help bring them back if they're about to step over the line or about to do something that's not going to be exactly right, what can I say to them? What can I be thinking? What can they be thinking that will help do that? And so I had this idea of legit. It's a common word in the vernacular, and it relates to the concept of legitimacy. And I simply put together a double acrostic using the word legit to communicate what we need to be thinking about when we're actually applying the law and enforcing the law. And that led me into a study of this culture and climate issue, which I really didn't know much about and had to do a lot of study. There's an entire field of study on work cultures and work climate. So there's a lot of work out there, and I try to reference that work in the book and then bring it together with some other ideas of areas that we need to change in terms of training, recruitment, promotion, and so forth, to try and have a direct, immediate effect on the outcome of law enforcement. If we deal with the process, we understand what's happening in the process and have a way to affect the process, then we'll get the outcome that we want.
So how do we convince the line guy, the patrol guy, that this is a good idea? Because to back away from your current clique, culture, group, whatever it is you're talking about, and to behave differently is to be ostracized, and that creates a whole other set of problems because, you know, your life is in somebody else's hand in that profession, literally. And if people feel you're not part of their little group, then you're not in any group within the police department. That's a bad place to be.
Well, with what's gone on nationally in the last couple of years, I don't think it's going to take much convincing. I think we just need to give the officers an option.
All right, that's a good idea.
Obviously, there's nothing magical about what I've put in the book. It's a good idea, and I hope that it's useful. And if nothing else, do what we're doing right now. So let's start talking about it.
Yeah, right.
Let's start pointing out the problem and finding ways to address the problem that are effective.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why these guys thought it was a great idea to put the death skull on their police car, but somebody apparently, and the city, by the way, if I remember correctly, voted for it too or something. I mean, everybody thought it was a great idea. How much of this do you think is connected to supervision? In other words, policies, procedures, you know, that's from the chief's office. Some chiefs don't go down and work line to line with the guys, right? And so they put their supervisors below them to implement all this stuff. Do you think that tone or that climate comes from that mid-group of mid-managers? We're talking about lieutenant levels, sergeant levels. Is that where the climate comes from? I don't know that it comes from the chief's office, because the chief's office is always trying to, you know, put the best foot forward, usually.
I agree. I think the climate comes from the talk of the line officers, but it's controlled or managed by the supervisors.
So it comes from the bottom up.
Important.
It comes from the bottom up. Comes from the patrol guys. That's where the culture is created.
Correct. And how far it goes.
Right.
And how much it pervades that climate is the issue of supervision. They can either allow it to continue, they can implicitly support it, or they can redirect it. They can put a stop to it if they manage their people correctly. And I think that's one of the biggest problems. I've been a patrol supervisor. I am now. I work the streets. I drive a police car, do 8 hours, 5 days a week. I manage a patrol shift. And I know how important it is for them to see what I think and what my attitude and what my approach is to doing the job. If I'm going out there and allowing them to do whatever and to get away with whatever, and I'm acting out of control when I'm handling calls, I'm being impatient with people, I'm yelling and screaming and cussing all over the place, that creates the wrong kind of environment where people will ultimately, inevitably get themselves in trouble by stepping over the line in enforcing the law. And I, as a supervisor, as a first line supervisor, have the ability to control that and to manage that in a way that produces positive outcomes and doesn't allow the kind of negative effects that we've seen in some of these other places that I've referenced. And most recently, the report that just came out last month from Chicago. That's the prime example right now in the media and in the industry as a whole is what's come out from the reports of Chicago. One of the main things that they found was that there was a lack of adequate supervision that created the climate and the culture that allowed those people to get out of control.
Now, here's something interesting about our, I like the way you use the word industry, by the way. This is kind of a new thing people are starting to say because it is an industry. But think about
Absolutely.
It as public service, but really it functions as a business in different ways. And I've always believed that the intervention part was sometimes the most difficult. And do you think the intervention should come? Well, right now, traditionally, I think intervention, as we know it, comes from a supervisor level that says, you did not behave properly to standards. We don't like what you did. We're going to write you up, do some paper, maybe get a couple days off. And let's just say, Jarvis, I was perhaps written up more than once as a police officer, as you might guess, because I would say, this is for you and this is for the horse you rode in on. And what you're saying, Lieutenant, is not true. It's not the law. It's not the policy. I was a stickler for rules, right? And then when the supervisors tried to discipline people or change my belief based on bad paper, right, because I could write better than they could, that created a whole giant conflict. Whereas if my patrol buddy next to me is doing something stupid, I say, hey, stupid, I don't want to lose my house. Stop doing that. They usually complied, right? So do we need less of this paper writing from management? Because, you know, some of it's politically driven, as you know, just because they don't like some guy. Where does the most effective peer intervention come from? I'm thinking it's line officers to line officers.
It absolutely is. And there's been some of that, but it hasn't been organized. It hasn't been folded into the culture of the department. And that's really what I'm talking about. Intervention in the last 20 or 30 years in our industry has typically been looked at in terms of an early intervention system or doing things after the fact. After something has happened,
right,
you respond to it more in terms of discipline or punishment. Or you've got this intervention system which looks at patterns and tries to see where the issues are. But the problem is that you have to have a lot of problems and a lot of issues happen before these early intervention systems kick in and recognize it. Whereas the guy that's working next to me, my partner, the guy that's working on the beat, the guy that comes and backs me on a call, he's right there, right then, and he can recognize it. He knows it's happening. He knows between right and wrong, whether I'm following procedure, whether I'm stepping over the line, whether I'm displaying a bad attitude or whatever. What he needs is the permission to intervene and a method or a tool to intervene with. And that's what I'm talking about in the book when I talk about the LEGIT program and using it for peer intervention. That's also what they're talking about down in New Orleans, where they actually have the EPIC program written and in force down there, and they're beginning to put their entire department through that program, and they have made peer intervention a part of the culture in their department. They're training the officers how to do it. They're giving them permission to do it, and they're helping the officers understand they're not going to get in trouble if they do it. If I tell my partner that he's stepping over the line and he needs to stop what he's doing, then I need to realize that I'm not going to be retaliated against for that. I'm not going to be punished for that. That's actually a value in the department, and the department wants me to do that. And even he can realize that it's a good thing that I'm helping him to intervene and keep him from stepping over the line. That's the whole concept of peer intervention today.
Well, it needs to happen more and more. Otherwise, you're left with things like this. So I had a case where, make a long story short, domestic violence. A guy jumped on my back, grabbed my gun. I mean, the girlfriend jumped on my back. The guy grabbed my gun. My training officer sitting there going, what should I do? My trainee, right? And we couldn't get back up. Anyway, make a long story short, I got in the fight. The guy died. I punched him out. He died. His heart exploded. Something happened. I never got sued, right? Nowadays, you'd be sued and put in jail, I'm sure. But what was interesting is the reply from the peer group was, watch out for Chuck. He kills people with his bare hands, right? That was the joke inside the department. And I didn't feel great about this guy dying. I didn't feel really badly either. He was trying to kill me, right? So I've adjusted to that. But the response from the culture inside the department was supportive, but a little on the, do we really want people to die when we go on patrol? I mean, I really didn't want that to happen, right? And then I had another one where I could have shot a guy at a mall who came up with a pair of scissors, but I felt safe enough to, you know, have my gun on him and then smack it out of his hands. And, you know, I handled it the way I thought was safe, but I was hazed for not shooting him, right? In other words, I was put down for not shooting the guy. The chief thought it was great. No lawsuit for the chief, right? Commendable restraint. So these things are very real inside the police department. These are a lot of pressures. They're not things that are easily flipped over and changed overnight, but they do have to start at that level where you have trust with your life or your partner. And therefore, if I act appropriately towards my partner, it's because I'm protecting your life, which means your house and your family and your job and everything else. And I think this is where it needs to come from. It's a good thing. It's coming from a good point. Does that make
Absolutely.
Sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's where it needs to come, because it's the problem has been identified in the past in some of these other studies that I've talked about, that people looking the other way is a big part of the problem. And you can call it what you want. You can call it that wall of silence, right, or the blue wall, or whatever you want to call it. Those things are kind of immaterial, but there is some truth to it, that you don't want to be looked down upon. You want to be, especially the newer officers, want to be accepted and as a part of the group. They want to everybody to think that they're willing to do what they need to do to get the job done, that they're courageous, that they're, you know what they're doing. And so sometimes they will look at this stuff and they will just ignore it. They will walk away. They won't say anything.
Well, that's a very important.
Those are the kinds of attitudes that we have to address.
Yeah, that's a super important point, because most rookies, when they get out of the academy, are on probation between 1 year, 18 months. But that's a good average, wouldn't you say?
Yes. And
so you have 18 months to prove you're going to fit in with the group, be part of the membership, part of the club, the climate, the culture. And that means that every officer that you get passed to as a trainee and who trains you has a different style and attitude. And you have to adopt your style and attitude to that trainer, that field training officer, or he's not going to sign you off, right? So if he thinks you should kick that guy's ass and you don't kick his ass, he's going to mark you down, right? And so this Correct. Is a very important part. Now, take that concept and let's push it back down to an academy level. Go backwards. I went to Rio Hondo, Class 61. It was considered one of the best academies in the country at the time. And I was taught a culture of yes, sir, no, sir, be professional, behave like a hero, you know, be proud of what you're doing, you know, don't be corrupted and all that kind of stuff. And that was a culture they taught in the academy. And a lot of it did translate into Southern California. We have pretty good agencies out here, you know, compared to some other parts of the country. But do you think the academy level needs to start bringing this stuff in there to change them? In other words, the trainee is going to come into you and you're his training officer and he's already has a dose of this book and understands how he needs to behave differently now.
Absolutely. It needs to be career-wide, because one of the things that I learned in studying the concept of work culture and climate is that there is a socialization process. It starts in the academy. It continues through field training. And really, it continues on throughout your entire career. There is always a process of socialization. If you go to a different unit, there's a socialization process that goes there. You learn from other people how to get the job done. It's as simple as that. And in the academy, there needs to be more of an effort to help people understand the kind of attitude that it takes and the kind of approach that it takes to police correctly. I like to call it constitutional policing nowadays. Instead of just getting them through the stages of learning the laws, learning the rules, learning the tactics, and then getting them out of the class and onto the streets. So it does absolutely have to begin in the academy. It has to continue. Not only do we have to correct the attitudes and the approaches of the frontline supervisors, but we've got to get into the heads of the FTOs, the field training officers, because they have the biggest impact in the socialization process for these rookie officers. When I started in 85, there were still officers in that department who had been policing in the 60s and the 70s. And they were still telling the stories of the police officers that they grew up with who policed in the 40s and 50s. And so those kinds of legends, that police lore of all the things that happened and the bad guys that, you know, lived in town and everything, what took place just continued to perpetuate generation after generation, decade after decade. And so you never really got away from some of that bad policing idea. And we've got to interrupt that process. And it starts in the academy, continues with the FTOs, continues with the first line supervisors, all the way up and down the ranks and throughout the career.
The book is Officer Up by Tim Tremaine, Creating a Climate for Appropriate Police Behavior. This is brilliant, Tim. I didn't get to read it, but I'm going to read it. And it's available on Amazon.com, right?
Correct.
All right. Do you have a website we could give people?
We do. OfficerUp.us.
Excellent. Tim, thanks for coming on Security Guy Radio. Really appreciate it. You're welcome.
Thank you
anytime.
For inviting me.
Anytime for coming on. Thanks a lot. All right. Tune in next Monday for another exciting episode of Security Guy Radio. Until then, be safe. Good night.